before we dive into today's message, I just wanted to take a moment to make an apology. A couple of weeks ago, when I was up here, I spoke on baptism, and I opened my talk by using Russell Brand as an example of a celebrity who has recently got baptized. Now, I am aware that Russell Brand has outstanding allegations of sexual misconduct against him, but I wasn't aware that actually recently he's had quite a few more levelled against him as well. Now, whilst it is certainly true that anyone with any past, any history of brokenness can come to Jesus and be forgiven and be restored, I'm really aware that naming Russell Brand as an example at the moment was pretty careless. So I wanted to apologise for that to you guys. Especially for those of us who have been victims of sexual violence, I would hate for there to be any mixed messages coming from this microphone. So I'd like to apologise for using Russell as an example. I could have used a different, much less problematic example, and I will endeavour to be more careful in the future. I'd also like to say a big thank you to the person who bravely came and confronted me about that afterwards and gave me their perspective. So thank you very much. Okay, so quick question, quick show of hands. Who here likes going to the doctors? You do? You are a doctor, so you're like, hey, how's it going? So that's one of us likes going to the doctors. Yeah, I don't like going to the doctors either. When I go to the doctors, I'm really looking for one thing. Well, a couple of things, really. I hate going to the doctors. It fills me with anxiety. And so when I go, what I really want to hear the doctor saying is, oh, it's okay. I know exactly what that is, and I know exactly what we can do about it. You know what I mean? Anybody know what I mean? Like, even if the treatment or the prognosis is a little bit iffy, it's just nice to know that you're in safe hands. Nice to know that what's going on is at least common. The reality is that all of us have times in our physical health when we experience that, when we have something which we're like, I don't know what this is. This is a kind of above my pay grade. I don't know what's going on here. I need an expert to come and speak into this. And hearing that voice of reassurance can be great, right? I think we can all agree with that. But I wonder, we all have those moments in our physical health, in our mental health, in our emotional health. I wonder, have you ever come across a moment in your spiritual health where you're kind of thinking, I don't really know what's going on here. I don't quite know what's happening. So again, we feel that in our physical bodies every now and again. But has anybody ever had the experience of feeling that in their spiritual life as well? Show me a hand, encourage me. Yes, there's a handful of us. Now, of course, if you're new to faith, if you've only been journeying with Jesus for a short while, you might not have this experience. Just bear with me for a moment. But it can feel to us like something has changed. Something's not as it was. So maybe we might feel like God isn't answering our prayers anymore. Whereas in the past, we've had this vibrant two-way relationship. All of a sudden, it feels like we're getting God's voicemail. Or maybe we come to times of worship like this, and our heart just feels dead cold within us. Or maybe we lack joy in the things that we used to find joy in, and we feel burnt out and disillusioned with church. Or maybe we go through some difficult life stuff, and God just seems to just wander off and leave us to it. It feels like he's not there. He's not bringing any comfort. Or we just look at folks who are younger than us and who have been following Jesus for just a few weeks, and they're all excited and joyful, and we think, I used to be like that. Another quick show of hands. Anybody experienced any of those things? Yeah, there's a handful of us. Phew. Personally, I've experienced this a handful over my times and over my walk with Jesus. And just like in all the other aspects of my life and my physical health and my mental health, you know, we all experience ups and downs in those things. And it's a good idea to kind of remain calm when we experience those ups and downs and not make any big drastic decisions. But sometimes we can find ourselves in fairly big and prolonged spiritual downs that feel bigger, more substantial, and actually feel almost impossible to shake. It's a pretty worrying place to be. Sometimes we can pinpoint the reason why we're there, and sometimes we can't, and we feel like it just happens to us. I remember the first time this happened to me. It was probably about 4 years ago. We'd just come out of the pandemic. We were kind of, as a church, trying to figure out how the heck we're going to meet again. And we were tired, we were running on empty, we were really discouraged. And in the midst of that time, a really key couple decided they were going to leave this church. And as they did so, they kind of leveled some criticism at us at the same time. A couple of months later, a few more key families left, and some of them left really well, some of them not so much. And we ended up feeling really wobbly, really shaken. And I can remember feeling really bruised and battered. And in that place, I cried out to God, I prayed, and I remember describing it at the time as feeling like I was getting God's voicemail. Previously, our relationship had been really vibrant, and it felt like God had gone on mute. It was horrible. It made me feel really wobbly, really, really shaken. Now, with hindsight, I know what was happening, what God was trying to highlight a handful of things in my life that he wanted to talk to me about. But in the moment, I felt lost and alone. It was a real feeling of spiritual desolation. So today, what I want to do is suggest that when we find ourselves in those moments, that's not a moment that we should be afraid of, and that's not a moment that we should shy away from. When we experience those times, even those really big, scary times, we shouldn't be discouraged. Certainly, the authors of the Bible were not shy about expressing the highs and lows, the deep depths of following Jesus and being part of the family of God. In the middle of our Bibles, you might know there's a book called the Psalms. It's basically 150 prayers and songs about God, about what God's like, and what it's like to be part of God's family. And 65 of those 105 psalms are called lament psalms. They're psalms where people are going, God, where are you? What is going on? Where have you gone? I do not understand. Almost half of them. Like, we should notice that. Perhaps the most famous example is one, Psalm 22, which opens with the cheerful line, my God, why have you abandoned me? Why are you so far away when I groan for help? Every day I call to you, my God, but you do not answer. Every night I lift my voice, but I find no relief. Anybody ever been there? Yeah, I'm getting some nods, I'm getting some hands. Coming soon to a Christian bookshop near you, a fridge magnet with that on it. Who's buying that bad boy? Seriously, if I was editing the Bible, I would cut that out. That would be the first thing to go. I'd be like, let's lose all of these psalms with all the negative stuff in them. It is terrible PR. But far from editing this psalm out of the Bible, this actually gets highlighted by none other than Jesus himself. Jesus starts crying this out when he's up on the cross. Our Bibles are not shy about talking about this reality. On the contrary, the Bible seems keen to shine a light on this reality. Rather than being a bug, an unfortunate, embarrassing fact about being a follower of Jesus, the Bible seems to highlight this reality like it's actually a feature. It's not a bug, it's a feature. Well, my intention in the next couple of weeks, so we're going to do two talks on this week and one next week, is to speak directly into that space. My intention is to bring that same comfort that we find at the doctors from hearing, I know what this is and I know what we can do about that. And what I want to do this week and next week is to give us a perspective and some language around what might be going on when we experience all of those frankly awful things in our spiritual lives. Because my experience is that when we go through those things, it can be a really lonely and isolating experience. And what I want to do today and next week is to just say really loud and clear that there's nothing wrong with us when we go through those things. That God still loves us. And actually that it's an essential part of the life of faith and following Jesus, not a departure from it. What I want to do for the next couple of Sundays is to bring a sense of peace and hope that as we as a community think about our spiritual health and walk with Jesus. I want to give us a framework and some language for thinking about this and some ideas of what we can do when we find ourselves here. How does that sound? Does that sound good? Okay, great. Okay, so what I'm going to be introducing and unpacking today over the next few weeks is a framework that I personally have found really, really helpful in my walk with Jesus. It's called the critical journey. Now, this is a way of looking at the life of faith and our journeys with Jesus over our lifetimes and attempting to map out the common places and experiences that people tend to move through as they walk with Jesus. Now, this framework was developed back in the 80s and 90s, so it's ancient wisdom, by a spiritual director called Janet Hagberg and a church leader called Robert Gulich, and it is based on a really extensive piece of research that they did into the ways that people experience the life of faith through their lives. Now, we are in a really privileged position. we can look back on 2,000 years of church history and generation after generation of Christians who have walked this route before us. So we have the opportunity to actually listen to them, to draw on their wisdom and their experience as we look at our own spiritual lives. We have a chance to see that we're not alone, to see that there's nothing wrong with us, and that many people who have also experienced those high highs and those low lows, we can learn to do the same. Anybody else here like hiking? Long walks? Yeah, absolutely. I love a good hike. The first thing we do when we go on a long journey, what do? We look at the route, right? We map out the path. We open a guidebook. What were you going to say? Have a nice breakfast. Yes. Put your shoes on and have breakfast. Okay, fine. I would get a guidebook out first. We have a look at the route. How long is this going to take me? What footwear do I need? Where is the path steep? Are there any shortcuts? Is there a pub? These are the important questions that we need to ask. When we go on a hike, we ask the questions of the people who have done the route before us. And this is simply the same. We're asking questions of those who've gone before us and learning from their wisdom and their observations. So this framework that we're going to look at today, do you like the emojis? We'll talk about them again in a minute because I'm disappointed with one of them. So this framework is called the critical journey. It's basically a way of naming and understanding the ways that people tend to move through their spiritual lives. It's a way of stepping back and viewing the journey from a distance, to reflect back, to act in the present, and to look ahead with clarity and wisdom. But before we plow in, before I explain it to you, emojis and all, I just want to say a few caveats. Okay, so caveat number one, some of us hate this, right? I'm not going to ask you to show your hands because you're too polite, but I'm aware that some of us will hate this. Reducing our spiritual journey, our walk with Jesus to like a diagram and a flow, it just feels clinical. I actually am with you. I kind of hate these things too. And if I hadn't found this so helpful, I wouldn't be sharing this with you. Can I encourage us all to approach this with an open mind, a generous spirit? There will certainly be something that will be helpful for each of us, I'm sure. Importantly, I'm about to introduce you to six stages in the life of faith, and this is really important. The objective is not to progress and move forwards to the next stage. It's not. It's not about trying to complete it, all right? This isn't like a computer game. This is a way of understanding where we are, where we've been, and where we're heading. There are unique challenges and opportunities available to us at each stage. None of the stages are better than others, and each is unique. Some are more enjoyable than others. I'm just going to put that out there. But each is an important step in the life of faith. Yes, great. Anyone ever done something like this in church before? Hand in the air. You have. Okay, so that's like one or two hands. You've maybe done it. You have a shaky hand over there. So this is what I mean by us doing an experiment this afternoon. We're going to see kind of how this lands. And as it's an experiment, I want you to come and tell me. Otherwise, I don't get any data. So please bring me data. Tell me. That worked for me. That didn't work for me. But just before I plow in, I just wanted to say, like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing this today? Where am I on here? Oh yeah, here we go. We're doing this so that as a community, ask a good question, no idea what the answer is. We're doing this today so as a community we can better understand our own spiritual journeys and the journeys of those around us. My objective here is to create a wellspring of kindness and compassion towards ourselves and those around us for wherever we're at on this journey. Does that sound okay? Okay, let's dive in. So I'd love to introduce you to this framework and see if it resonates with you. And if your experience is anything like mine, you'll recognize yourself somewhere. But I also want to ground this in our Bibles to reassure you that it's not just a cold, hard piece of research, but actually comes with some biblical resonance too. And so I'm going to be grabbing some examples from the life of Peter, who was one of Jesus' followers, one of his closest friends, who kind of went through these stages in fast forward. So I'm not going to dwell on these points. I'm just going to grab them as we go past. And if you'd like to dig any deeper into this, then just thinking about the life of Peter is a really, really good way of doing that. So we're just going to jump in. So the first stage is called the recognition of God. And this is where I'm disappointed with the emojis. I was kind of going for this like, oh, God is real face, but that looks distinctly concerned. So forgive my emojis. This is the recognition of God. This is the moment in our lives when we realize there is a God, that God is good, basically, it's our first encounter with Jesus, and we decide we want to give our lives to follow him. We see this moment happening again and again in the gospel where Jesus encounters people, heals them, restores them, and they start following him. And we recognize this as our I once was lost, but now I'm found moment. In this stage, everything seems simple. It seems instinctive, not necessarily rational or backed up with thoughts, but it's emotional and it's wonderful. It's very much like that first flush of falling in love. We just get swept along in the flow and it's wonderful. And we see this moment in Peter's life when he first encounters Jesus whilst fishing, and Peter just drops his nets. He drops everything that he's doing and he goes and he follows Jesus. And this stage tends to naturally lead into stage two, which usually happens when we get stuck into a local church just like this. And this stage is called the life of discipleship. And here our knowledge about God kind of catches up with our feelings about God. Here we learn what it means to be a follower of Jesus in everyday life. We experience God's love as forgiveness for our past mistakes. And we get this sense of grace and mercy. And here we learn how to read our Bibles, how to pray. We learn the importance of smaller groups. Here we grow. This is where most folks will get baptized. And slowly we start to learn not only about God, but also about how God has made us. In Peter's story, there are all of these moments where Jesus is walking with his disciples, answering their questions and demonstrating the kingdom. Peter is watching and learning. And this tends to lead really naturally into the next stage, which is called the productive life. And here we start to get comfortable with the way that God has made us. We identify our giftings, our calling. We ask, where has God placed me and how has God made me? Here we're asking about what I can do to express my love for God and serve his community. This is where we look to take responsibility in church, or we go and start something that brings the kingdom. This is a wonderful, wonderful place to be because it fills us with a sense of purpose, a sense of being a round peg in a round hole, working in the kingdom, working for the king, using my giftings, amazing. This is a really, really rewarding place to be. And in many ways, this stage feels like the destination. It feels like we've made it. It feels like we're doing what we're made to do. Job done. Thank you, Jesus. And in Peter's story, you might recall there's a moment where Jesus steps out of a boat and he walks towards Jesus on the water. And that's exactly what's going on here. We're stepping out in faith and we're doing amazing things with Jesus. Okay, everyone take a deep breath. Fantastic. We're going to take literally 2 minutes to chat with the people around you. Do you recognize any of these stages either in yourself or in those around you? You don't have to share anything you don't feel comfortable to share. But out of those three stages, the recognition of God, the life of discipleship, and the productive life, do you recognize those things? Do those have any resonance with you? Gloucester Vineyard Church people, make sure that everybody is involved in this moment of conversation. This is just going to be a couple of minutes. On your marks, get set, go. Okay, let's draw those conversations to a close. That was quick, wasn't it? I realized too late, I should have used the mind blown emoji for the first one, right? That's where I should have gone. Never mind, these things always come a little bit too late. So after stage three, we then eventually find ourselves at stage four, which is called the journey inwards. And here we get a pretty significant vibe shift, I'm afraid. Here is where we find ourselves face to face with our deep inner brokenness. And it's pretty awful. Those things that we identified earlier, feeling like you're kind of getting God's voicemail, feeling like your heart has gone cold, feeling fed up, burned out, disillusioned, all of those things live here. We tend to encounter those things right at the beginning of stage four. For many of us, when we enter this stage, we enter it when something big happens in our lives. Maybe a bereavement, maybe a betrayal, maybe a failure or a disappointment. But it can also be about fatigue. We can say, you know, I've been slogging my guts out for years and I'm just absolutely exhausted. What have I got to show for all my efforts? At this stage, God can feel different, absent, distant. Our relationship seems to not function in the same way as it used to. We want to withdraw from church community and not plug in. It's a confusing time. It's a disconcerting time. And it can lead us to despair. I'm going to spend a whole lot of time next week talking about stage four and what comes next, including sharing some of my own experience of being here. But for today, it's worth just saying that when people are in stage four, eventually they come across something that the authors of this framework call the wall. And we are at the wall when we recognize that we need to face up to the deepest things in our life which are holding us back from full intimacy with God. Those things which in the previous stages were kind of rumbling in the background, but we were able to kind of ignore pretty successfully. You know, our deep feelings of insecurity and inadequacy, our really low self-esteem, our dysfunctional history and relationship with our family, the wounds that others have inflicted on us, our selfish ambition or our desire for personal gain, the lies that we believe about ourselves, our secret addictions and coping mechanisms, all of those horrible little things that we try to hide and work around are suddenly up in our face. And we realize that if we're going to move forward in our lives, if we're going to move forward with Jesus, that that stuff needs to be dealt with first. We see this painful moment in Peter's story too. Just before Jesus is killed, there's a brutal scene where Peter fails to stand by Jesus and he publicly denounces him three times. It's a totally shameful moment of failure. And Peter runs away broken. I mean, who knows what's going on in Peter's heart right there, but clearly he came up against a wall and he couldn't get past that wall. So it's no surprise, really, that when we come up against the wall, most people, we do exactly what Peter did. We run away. And who can blame us? When faced with the reality of that list of dysfunctional things, I would, frankly, rather do anything than work through that. So we try all sorts of things to make it go away. We fake it till we make it, except we don't make it, pretending that we're actually back at stage 3 or 2 or 1. We hope that our inners will catch up somehow. We sing, "Come on, my soul, don't you get shy on me," and somehow it doesn't do anything. Or we blame shift. We figure it must be the fault of the church or the church leader, and so we go looking for another community to be part of, which incidentally seems to work for quite a long time, but then eventually we just find ourselves back at the wall again, and it's all of the same stuff straight in front of us again. Or we engage in my personal favorite, self-flagellation. We say, "Come on, pull yourself together. Stop feeling so sorry for yourself." And we basically find ourselves back at stage 3 and we just work harder. We ignore the pain. We push on. We try and get more done and we make a mess of our internal and our external lives. This is my story. This is my song. Or we just go for it and we just really feel sorry for ourselves. We wallow in misery. We give in to the hopelessness. We seek comfort wherever we can find it. And we just turn into Eeyore. It's a pretty attractive list, right? I'm sure that none of us would ever engage in any of those things, right? Yeah. Right? Okay, thanks. Or perhaps most tragically, we walk away from our faith altogether. We decide that perhaps we were wrong all along. We decide that maybe God isn't real, that God doesn't love us. And unfortunately, we've seen that happen time and time again. And I think that's particularly tragic because actually in reality, the very opposite is true. It's because God is real. It's because God loves us that he brings us to the wall. It's exactly because he loves us that he brings us to a place where we cannot move forward without looking those things dead in the eye and dealing with them once and for all. The invitation at the wall is an invitation to healing. It's an invitation to life and life in all of its fullness. The invitation at the wall is to get down to the real business of being an image of God, the stripping off and reshaping of everything in our lives which God didn't intend to be there. Make no mistake, this is a hard piece of work. This is a long, sometimes painful, always difficult piece of work. Good afternoon. Welcome to Gloucester Vineyard Church. It's great to have you with us. This is what we're doing today. Why are we doing this today? Why are we doing this? It's Sunday afternoon at like 25 minutes past 5. We don't need this today. But I think that actually we do. Because whether we like it or not, sooner or later we find ourselves here. And I think some of us are here right now. Remember what I said earlier on about creating a wellspring of kindness and compassion in our community, directed at ourselves and directed at those around us? This is a place that needs kindness. We're doing this today to make a couple of really clear statements. The first thing is to expect the wall, to recognize it when it happens to us. And in the words of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, don't panic. The other is to say it is possible to get past the wall, and there is life on the other side. We're going to be talking a lot more about that next week. But for now, should we just peek over the wall and see what's on the other side? I mean, for goodness sake, at this stage in the afternoon, we need a glimmer of hope, don't we? So stage 4 is called the journey inwards. Stage 5 is called the journey outwards. And I'm just going to read a little section of notes that I read in preparation for this week. It says this: we have journeyed through stage 4 and the wall, and we have discovered that God, we have rediscovered God in a new and deeply profound way. Now we are surrendered to God's will and ready to embrace activity with a new sense of fulfillment. We are outwardly focused from a new grounded center of ourselves. In stage 5, we start to live out the outward focused life again. We start to rediscover who God is in fresh way. We have a new and simple and beautiful understanding of his love for us. And we have a newfound love for ourselves as well. In stage 5, we learn to truly thank God, not only for the way that he made us, our individuality, but also to thank him for our wounds, to thank him for our scars. We thank him for our brokenness, because it has led us closer to him. It has given us a chance to experience his love and his healing. In this stage, we tend to do a lot less, but what we do has a much bigger impact. We will be a lot happier simply waiting to see what God is doing and then joining in somehow, leaving the fruit and the outcome to him. Stage 5 is characterized by an unhurried, peaceful, and assured sense of just walking through life, seeing God at work everywhere, and joining in where we feel God is inviting us. Anyone ever come across anybody like this? Yeah, there's a few people. Not many, right? Absolutely. I am so attracted to these people. My goodness, you meet somebody like this, and I'm like, how do I get where you are? It is a wonderful place to be. People in stage 5 make great mentors. And mercifully, we get this moment in the life of Peter where he's reunited with Jesus in love. When Peter drops his nets again and runs to be with Jesus. I think it's in John 21, I think. And Jesus recommissions him to cover over his failure. And he turns him outwards to go and feed his sheep. It's a beautiful moment of Jesus in love, just covering over what Peter did and turning him outwards in love. It's beautiful. And then finally, there's stage 6, where you're basically Jesus, the Pope, or a unicorn. It's called the, it's kind of an extension of stage 5. It's called the life of love. And yeah, like, yeah. So give the person next to you a very quick high five. We're going to bring this thing into land. Well done. This is an experiment. Data is helpful. Please give me data. So I've mentioned this is a one of a two-parter. Next week, we're going to talk more about the experience of stage 4 and the wall and what I've personally found helpful. And we're also going to be making some time for ministry as well, some prayer ministry. But today, I just wanted to simply end with a moment of discussion and prayer. I wanted us to get back into those little groups. And if you feel comfortable, to just share what's stuck out to you today. Has any of this resonated with you? Is there anything that you particularly feel was true or not true? It would just be great to share those things. And if it's appropriate in those groups, to take a moment to pray. Now, in a moment, any minute now, the kiddos are going to come rushing back in. We're going to make them feel so welcome when they do. But for now, I just want to encourage each of us to get into those little groups, to kind of land this in your groups and just share anything you feel comfortable to share. And if it's appropriate to pray with one another, go for it. But when the kiddos come back in again, we're going to welcome them. So why don't we get back into those groups and we're going to have a little time of discussion and prayer.